Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. My name is David Law, a commentator for BBC Radio 5 Live and BT Sport, and I'm joined, of course, by TV's Catherine Whittaker from Eurosport fame. Catherine, how are you doing?
TV's Catherine Whittaker. I think that's the first time anybody said that. I'm doing very well, thanks, David. How are you?
Oh, good. I'm very well. I hear that not all is well in the family of pets in the Whittaker household after your mum drew painted a lovely picture of one of your dogs and Rosie's not too pleased. Is that right?
Rosie's not too pleased. So, without getting into the complexities of the Whittaker family pet setup, one of our dogs that we had for many years, Bella, who's featured in photos, she actually lives with my aunt and uncle up in Staffordshire now. So we see her when she's on holiday. She comes for holidays with Rosie, but she's still very much our beloved dog. And she is rather older than Rosie. She's getting on a bit now. She's 13. And so my mum painted a very, very beautiful portrait of Bella for me for my birthday. It was a lovely, lovely gift. And poor Rosie doesn't understand, perhaps, that, you know, there's she, all being well, there should be another 10 years or so for my mum to paint Rosie, but it's difficult to communicate that to a dog. So
That's why she was looking so thoroughly annoyed in the picture that I saw.
Yes. I mean, she did have a lovely weekend, Rosie. I don't want to miscommunicate the joy that Rosie experiences on a daily basis. She
I
is
see.
In utter clover. So, yes. And one day she too will be immortalised in pastel, but today is not her day.
Okay, so before we get on to talking about Fed Cup and Grigor Dimitrov Alex Zverev and Maria Sharapova's wild card and all the pole vaults that we've been running, any other pet news at all?
I've got a new tennis podcast pet, David. He doesn't know it yet, but I've got a cat. I've got a cat.
Really?
He doesn't know what he's got himself in for.
Crikey. What's the cat's name?
His name is Magic. He's 11. We rescued him from Battersea and he's lovely. I mean, he is cowering under a cupboard at the moment. He doesn't know what's going on, but he's only been here 2 days. So I'll give him a chance to get settled before he has his induction into the Tennis Podcast Pets Hall of Fame.
Right. Magic. Hello, Magic. Anyway, I wasn't expecting that.
Whittaker. Well, he's a communal cat, so perhaps Whittaker won't be a surname. But it's like Magic Johnson, isn't it? Just Magic.
Yes,
Magic
the basketball player. Right. Yes. Okay, but Magic Johnson doesn't cower underneath wardrobes. But anyway, welcome to Magic. Welcome, Tennis Podcast Pets, one and all. Catherine, since we last spoke, a lot has gone on. I mean, we were talking Davis Cup a week ago. Should say, I mean, it's a bit of a sour note on which to start in a way, but we were talking about Denis Shapovalov's belting the ball that hit the umpire, and that story has moved on since a week ago, and that umpire is now having or has had surgery to a fractured eye socket, which, I mean, we were obviously discussing at the time the severity and the danger of what Shapovalov had done. He didn't need telling twice, I don't think, afterwards. But there was still a feeling in a way that we were all kind of slightly laughing it off because, thankfully, nothing seemed to be wrong with the umpire. He was saying that he ended up looking right, Rocky Balboa and all this kind of thing. But that has taken a turn of great seriousness, hasn't it?
Yeah, I understand. Well, the reports are that this surgery was successful, which is great. But obviously that's a horrible injury to have to recover from. I can only imagine, really. My mum's had a bit of eye surgery in the past, and it's, well, I'm sure anyone can imagine, it's just completely debilitating if you can't see properly, and it sort of affects your balance and all of that. I mean, terrible, terrible news, particularly in his line of work. So yeah, all we know at the moment is the surgery seems to have been successful, and I'm sure he's got all the support he needs in order to recover and get back full sight and everything. But yeah, it's not the news you wanted to hear, and I worry now a bit for Shapovalov if it's not the sort of thing that he can move on from. You know, I think the news of the sort of downturn in fortunes regarding the injury, I think that could have really affected him, actually, gauging from his response afterwards and just how devastated he was by the impact of what he had done. I mean, obviously, they're tougher times for Arno Gabas, but I think these could be quite dark times, really, for Denis Shapovalov, and I don't like to think of that for a 17-year-old who basically seems like a very good kid.
Yeah, at the same time, I mean, it also does throw into light the fine he had was $7,000. And when you think of some of the fines that have gone around for various bits of misbehaviour or racket abuse, court abuse, whatever there might be, I know a number of people within tennis who just think that is just not serious enough. And we mentioned Richard Ings last week, who believes some sort of suspension should have been forthcoming for this. I mean, I do feel for Shapovalov in that you know, he's clearly mortified. I mean, it seems to have had a really profound effect on him as well. But I mean, this is serious. Anyway, it is what it is as things stand, and we wish Arno Gabas the very quickest of recoveries and hope he's well soon. Now, the Fed Cup, Catherine, thankfully, certainly has not dealt out any physical trauma of that ilk. It has caused controversy over the weekend. Before we get on to that controversy, from a British perspective, we would first, I think, like to talk about the victory for Great Britain, which was an excellent one and an important one, I think, because okay, it's way down effectively in the minor leagues. This is where Leon Smith started out, really, in the Euro-African zones. And the way the Fed Cup is set up, they had to come through four matches over the course of 4 days, basically, didn't they, in order to get through just to the Group 2 playoffs in April, which is something Britain have done a couple of times over the last few years. They've both times that they've done it, they've ended up in away ties, the last one in Argentina. It is a horrible section to get out of. But they had Joe Konta, which is obviously a huge boon to the team, a top 10 player, alongside Heather Watson and Laura Robson, and they got through. But my goodness, it was close in the end after plain sailing early on.
Yeah, close in the end, because of, well, what turned out to be a very surprising result, Joe Konta losing to Anna Konya of Croatia. But by all accounts, very unfortunately, and this makes me very sad, we were unable to watch that tie in this country. There wasn't coverage of it, which is a great shame. I understand that it's far down the far down the scale in terms of the stature of the tie on the world stage. But obviously for us in Great Britain, we have a fantastic team now. And we discussed last week, the Fed Cup is, especially down in those lower groups, is a bit bonkers to get your head around the format of it. But once you do, it's fantastic. There's just all this tennis going on. It's like a little festival of team tennis. It's really great if you invest the time to understand it. And it seemed like a really, well, it seemed to be completely plain sailing, completely uninteresting series of ties. You know, 3-love wins, 3-0 wins over Latvia, Turkey and Portugal. All going brilliantly, and then it all came down to the wire against Croatia. And I know you've spoken to Anki Othavong, and she explains that Anna Konju just played the absolute match of her life. And we know how good she can be at her best. It's been a shame not to see her at her best as much as perhaps we thought a year or so when she was first breaking through. But she's got plenty of time. And it was good. I mean, it would have been great, the drama, if we could have watched it. It's just a shame we couldn't. But hopefully we'll be able to see the next one.
Yeah, well, somebody who was able to watch it was indeed Anki Othavong. I spoke to her a little bit earlier, and first of all, I asked her what it was like.
It was incredible, really good. Obviously, the fact that we won all our matches and qualified was the main thing. That's what we kind of set out for at the start of the week. But the whole experience for everyone, I do think it was an enjoyable week. I think just the drama of it all on Saturday just made the whole thing even more better in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been pretty stressful. I can hear your daughter getting a bit excited, yes, in the background. And she, I mean, I dare say she was watching the live scores come in. But I mean, seriously, to be you, you've been in Fed Cup teams for so many years. Must be different to be on the sidelines and basically not be able to actually get at the nervous energy on the court. But I suppose you're doing what you can.
Yeah, to be honest, it felt worse being on the side, actually, because it's just out of your control. So in terms of nerves and trying to manage those, it's nothing like I've ever experienced before. I mean, as a player, you're dealing with all sorts of pressure and everything and being there in the moment and obviously trying to come up with the goods, not just for yourself, but for the team. But being on the sidelines, I kind of feel now for every parent and coach out there watching, you know, their player or kid play, because it's just, at times I just felt sick and I just thought, you know, all sorts of things go through your mind and you just think, oh my goodness, you know, what can I say? What can I do to help the situation? And at the same time, you're trying obviously to just put out positive emotion and you're trying to keep a straight face when things aren't quite going the way you want it to go.
Yeah. And I mean, it all was going so swimmingly. I mean, what was it? 10 matches won, 10 rubbers won, all of them, singles and doubles. And Heather goes 1-0 up in the final, as it were. And obviously, I mean, Joe being the top 10 player and an excellent player she now is. I mean, obviously Anna Konju, we know how explosive she is, and she proved that in the match she had. But there must have been a bit in your mind where you thought, oh well, you know, this is just going gloriously. I'm not going to have to make it necessarily a tough decision, but that's not how it panned out.
Yeah, you're right there. I mean, when Heather won her match against Donna Vekic, you know, we were all fired up. I didn't expect it to be, I guess, as one-sided as it was that match. And, you know, Heather throughout the week from start to finish was just superb on the match court. And, you know, when Joe stepped out against Anna Konju, you know, Joe hadn't dropped, hadn't lost the match all week, as you would expect, being the highest ranked player there. And she went 4-2 up in the first set and everything was going fine, but credit to Anna Konju. I mean, she played lights out tennis. I mean, she was hitting that ball so hard. And, you know, everything was working. And you're sitting there watching this and you think, gosh, if this girl played like this every week, she will rocket up the rankings. And, you know, Jo gave it her best, with what she had on the day. You know, you could say, yes, okay, it wasn't her finest performance, but still, you've got to give credit where it's due. But yeah, sitting there for that match, yeah, it's tough. Knowing Jo as well as I do, you know, she's trying her hardest out there, and that's all you can ask from a player. And unfortunately, it's not going to be perfect every time, but yeah, I don't know. I was sitting there and I was still in my mind. I thought, you know, she's going to turn it around. And then when it didn't happen, it was a bit of a blow, but the match wasn't over. And, naturally, Joe was pretty upset after that loss, which you would expect. But then it came to making the decision for the doubles. And, you know, with the way Heather had been playing all week, she hadn't dropped a set. You know, she's a fantastic doubles player. So that was a no-brainer that Heather was going to be involved in that deciding doubles. But I did feel, you know, speaking to Jo after her singles match, she was ready. She was fired up to put things right in the doubles. And she's our number one player, and she's also a very capable doubles player.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, when do you make that decision? Had you sort of just kind of worked it out before the day had started, or, you know, or is it a question of seeing how Jo feels herself and speaking to her? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, there are a number of different factors. Obviously, the opposition, you know, you have to think whose game's going to match up better. Obviously, the players you've got, you need to know that whoever's going to be playing. Sorry, Ava's kicking off.
she's the new coach.
She's been doing well. She's been doing well for the past few minutes. You know, it's also you've got to factor in how each and every one of your players are feeling physically, and you need to know whoever's going to play that deciding match is 100% fit. And, you know, you need to know that they're fired up and that they really want it. And Jo, you know, I basically had 15 minutes from the end of her match to make a decision, because those are the rules. You know, after she had a few minutes to cool off, you know, she was right back there and she wanted to play. And credit to her, because she, you know, that doubles match started just over half an hour after the loss of her singles, and she managed to pick herself up, and both her and Heather were so fired up in that doubles, as was everyone else, and they managed to turn it around.
That's fantastic. Fantastic. Well, final question to ask really is about, I mean, obviously the format generally is brutal. We've seen for years how Britain have had so many good results and then fallen at the last in either in that stage, or they've had a really tough away draw. I think you went to Argentina, didn't you, last time?
Yeah.
The draw is tomorrow.
Yeah.
What are you hoping for?
What am I hoping for? I'm hoping for a home tie. That is what I'm hoping for. And in terms of opposition, you know, whoever we're drawn against, I think we've got a team that if everyone is fully fit.
And also you can call up Ava if all else goes wrong. You know,
Ava thinks we're going to win whoever we play.
Does she? That's fantastic.
That's what she's trying to say. But whoever we're drawn against, you know, I do think we've got players who can perform at the very highest level. So, you know, on that front, it doesn't really matter. But I would, for British tennis and for the girls and for everyone involved in Fed Cup, I would love more than anything a home tie.
Yeah, well, I think it's 1993 last time Britain were at home in the Fed Cup. So fingers crossed for you. It's a fantastic win. Congratulations to you all. Great
Thank
stuff.
You very much.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So Anki Ottavong, her first ever experience, Catherine, of Fed Cup captaincy, and you heard her lovely daughter Ava in the background during that interview, which was a delight. Somebody I've met, I'm happy to say, when I was in Singapore at the WTA finals, and what a lovely little girl she is. Anyway, Catherine, that is a job that would... You must go through it. I mean, she was saying there that you go from one extreme to another. I mean, it could so easily have been pipe and slippers lying back in the deck chair, really, couldn't it, if Contra had won that singles, and then suddenly you're plunged into a deciding set of the doubles. And it does strike me that there is a problem. I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Is there a problem with the setup of an event where you can be absolutely dominant and have won 10 out of 10 matches, and then suddenly it can come down to the last one? To, you know, you can lose one and then be into your final one, and if you don't win that, you literally go back down to square one like snakes and ladders, and you're there again this time next year. What do you think?
I think there is a problem with the format of the Fed Cup. I think there's lots good about it, and I wouldn't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because I think, yes, it's complicated, but actually there is some good to how complicated it is. It is intriguing and interesting, but there are so many teams, so many countries in those Euro-Africa zone ties, and yet so few places for... You're competing just for the chance of promotion, just for the chance of promotion, which is pretty brutal, isn't it? You're right, it is. It does feel like there's something unfair about it, but on the other hand, it makes for fantastic drama. I can see that, because there's just so much on the line, and it makes every match count, which I think is really good. You know, there was a lot of rage on Twitter last week. Rage, perhaps an overstatement, although I think Todd Woodbridge was close to rage, if you can imagine that scene on Twitter about getting rid of dead rubbers in Davis Cups. And it's an embarrassment for the sport that people tune in and see what's effectively an exhibition match that doesn't count for anything under the guise of important tournament team tennis, and I agree with him. So you rarely get that, you know. It all counts, doesn't it? And I think there's something to be said for that. But I think we'd be burying our heads in the sand if we said that the Fed Cup couldn't do with a little bit of a revamp and rejig with regards to the format.
Yeah, well, there are certainly going to be changes afoot over the next couple of years. It seems as though they want to go with a world group, a bigger single world group in the future. So we'll see how that all unfolds. But it does mean that Britain are into that that group two playoff in April, and we'll find out tomorrow. As we talk to you on Monday, we'll find out tomorrow who they're going to play. Now, the Fed Cup world group proper had some interesting ties, and also a really, really uncomfortable moment in the USA against Germany tie. If you haven't seen this, I mean, it is uncomfortable if you view it, but basically during the preliminaries, the opening ceremony of that tie, they actually played the wrong stanza of the national anthem of Germany, and they used a World War II period version of the opening stanza of that rendition of the national anthem, and it was excruciating. They had a guy there basically singing it live, and obviously immediately the German team realized what was going on, and they started to sing the correct version and tried to drown out this version, as did various members of the crowd. But Andrea Petkovic in particular was just totally disgusted with what she'd heard, and described it as the epitome of ignorance. And that was followed up by Andy Roddick tweeting that, yeah, I'm afraid to say it's there's really no excuse. How difficult is it to check and get this right? It's too easy to get right. The USTA were very quick to come out and apologize and make no excuse for what they'd done at all, but an awful moment.
Yeah, there's not much to say about it, really. There's, you know, it's not a discussion point or a a debate topic. It was just a horrible, excruciating moment. It'd be very easy to start talking about the political situation in America and drawing conclusions, but I do believe it was an honest mistake, if an unforgivable one, because just because it's honest doesn't mean it's okay, because exactly as you say, Andy Roddick said it pithily, as always, on Twitter, it's just too easy to get right. There's no, I'm sure a head has rolled somewhere. And thank goodness for the likes of, I think this was something Chris Clary said, but thank goodness for the likes of Andrea Petkovic, such a thoughtful, intelligent, switched on person who was there to explain and communicate so eloquently why it was such an affront to the German players, if it needed explaining. But she did explain it extremely well. And in light of that, it's an unforgivable error.
From there, the United States went on and won that tie 4-0. So they're now through, and they face, I think, the Czech Republic, who are on just this extraordinary run. Isn't it 6 of the last 7 Fed Cups that the Czech Republic have won? And they now go to the States. I mean, that could be a really good tie, couldn't it?
Yeah, their depth is just unbelievable, the Czech Republic. Yes, they had Pliskova, but it was by no means an absolute full-strength squad for the Czech Republic, not least because Petra Kvitova wasn't there. But she did send a good luck message, which was shown in the stadium to rapturous applause, as I'm sure you can imagine. She looked very well in it and very upbeat, which was wonderful to see. The stadium in Ostrava, I believe, where it was played, was absolutely packed on every single day, which is just fantastic for obvious reasons, and they are just the most loyal servants to the Fed Cup, don't they? The tournament loves them as much as they love it. And Strzelcowa lost out to Muguruza, but Pliskova, perhaps as you'd expect, was the hero of the tie. She was fantastic, and they get their top players playing because it's a country that understands what it can do for their tennis, and that is great. I mean, Serena Williams tweeted her congratulations to the USA team for winning through to that semi-final against the Czech Republic. I'd be very surprised if that indicates in any way her intention to play. I would be surprised to see either Williams sister involved in that match. I could be wrong, but, you know, we're not we're not anywhere near an Olympic year, so sort of the incentive from that side isn't there for them to commit to Fed Cup. And I would love to see one or both of them play, but I don't think it'll happen. I mean, that's not to detract too much from the tie. They've got Van der Weij, they've got Sloane Stephens, they've got Madison Keys, who hopefully will be back fit. They've still got a good shout, the USA, but obviously it would be fantastic if, I mean, yeah, imagine if both Kvitova and the Williams sisters played. I think, obviously, that's getting ahead of ourselves, but I suppose that would be the dream.
Yeah, I think it's pretty unlikely that we'll see Kvitova play. I'd be surprised to see her again this year, personally, but I know, obviously, that would be the dream scenario if it could happen. What does strike me, though, from people I've spoken to over the last few months about Fed Cup and about Karolina Pliskova, who's somebody who's beginning to sharp ends of Grand Slams, is that, yes, it's a big deal for when she reached the final of the US Open, but actually in the Czech Republic, it is a bigger deal for them to win the Fed Cup. And I found that really interesting. It ultimately comes down to your tennis culture within your country, doesn't it? I mean, we were in Singapore, other parts of the Far East really value doubles more than other parts of the world. And I think that certain countries really value the team success of their nation more than an individual winning a slam.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely true. I think certain players feel that. I mean, I know Mark Philippoussis, for example, considers his Davis Cups the greatest achievements of his career. And I think a lot of Australians often say the same. I think the year that Great Britain won the Davis Cup, I think it took us. I mean, I think by the final and after we won it, we all understood and all got on board. But I don't think, I think it took us a couple of ties. I think it took the USA tie and perhaps the quarterfinal tie against France as well for us to really understand and embrace it. We didn't come into the Davis Cup that year with the same following and understanding that the Czech Republic go into every Fed Cup with. I think, you know, Argentina and Davis Cup have the same sort of relationship. There are plenty of examples on it of it. I just wish it applied to every country, really.
Mm. So what else happened in the Fed Cup over the course of the weekend?
Belarus, without a player ranked inside the top 100. Their top ranked was Alexandra Sasnovich, who I think was 128 in the world going into this. Yeah, 128 in the world. And then they had Irina Sabalenka, 142 in the world. Olga Gavortseva, who most will have heard of, but she's well outside the top 100, 174. They beat the Netherlands, who were
last year's Belarus.
Of course, on paper, a far stronger side. But it was Sasnovich's win over Kiki Bertens that did it. Really impressive stuff. And yeah, and Azarenka-less Belarus are the surprise package of the Fed Cup for this year, without question. On the other side, we had Switzerland. Well, not on the other side, in fact, because they will play Belarus in the semi-final. Switzerland beat France 4-1. Mladenovic getting the only point on the board for France in that one. France with only three team members, as I pointed out last week. But they've got a very strong team, Switzerland, haven't they, with Bescinski and Bencic and a certain Martina Hingis as well, of course. So, yeah I think it's going to be some interesting semi-finals. Obviously, Switzerland, the heavy favourites to reach the final now.
Indeed. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how those ties unfold. Now, on the ATP circuit, there were three events taking place, and every one of them yielded just the most wonderful stories in terms of the winners. We've obviously, Catherine, got a little bit of a soft spot for what happened in Sofia, where Grigor Dimitrov, in his home country, won the title. His second title of the year means he's only lost to Rafael Nadal all year long. What has he won, like 14 matches, one defeat, something like that? And I don't know, I actually saw the closing stages of this match, obviously. He was a set and five love up, was Dimitrov against David Goffin, and playing wonderfully well. He then went 5-1, 40 love, three match points, and got his serve broken. And you did start to think, I did anyway, back to Istanbul, where he was a break up and he was match point up, and he ended up losing the match and nigh on defaulting himself by breaking all of his rackets. And from five love, he went to 5-4 back on serve, and he was wobbling big time, and you could hear a pin drop. He'd got the whole of the sort of organisation team of the tournament in the corner of the court, the way they do, waiting to come on for the presentation, you know, all assembled there, and it's all going badly wrong on the court for a few minutes there. And finally, he managed to break the Goffin serve to win the title and kiss the court. He was ecstatic. He was giving hugs to his mum and dad and to Danny Valvadou, and it was great to see. I mean, I know that I'm always banging on about him, but you know, we've loved watching him play for a long time, and yet he looked as though he was frankly throwing it all away. Maybe he never will reach the sort of heights that we thought he might one day, but at least he's playing now like he should be playing.
Oh, without question. I mean, his record for the year is unbelievable. As you say, just that one five-set loss to Nadal in the semi-finals in Melbourne, which he so easily could have won, and then what? This is a different Grigor Dimitrov, without question. That the pressure on him, yes, it's only an ATP 250 that barely anybody was paying attention to in Sofia, but the pressure on him to win that would have been immense. He is a friend of mine that works for the ATP, was out in Sofia because it's one of their newer events, so giving it some coverage. And of course, Dimitrov playing there. He didn't actually confirm he was going to play there until early this year. I'm sure there were all sorts of negotiations going on behind the scenes because, you know, that would be like, I mean, it would be a far bigger deal than Murray not playing Queens, which will never happen, as we know, David, because he's got a lifetime deal. But it would be a different stratosphere to that. I mean, I said, is he the David Beckham of Bulgaria? And she said, bigger, far, far bigger. He is the biggest star imaginable in that country. And just a quick update on some gossip that I dropped on a podcast during the Australian Open. I understand he and Scherzi are back together. Just to revise, it wasn't my gossip, it was Jim Courier's gossip that I just passed along. But I feel like I should at least set the record straight and inform Jim Courier, if he's listening, that he was peddling inaccurate news. Or perhaps they broke up and got back together. Anyway, they seem to be back on.
What do you mean if he's listening? I mean, of course he's listening. Of course he's everybody listens.
All the big names tuning in.
Hello, Jim.
Yeah, so I mean it was great to see. I mean, he was a set down to Jerzy Janowicz in the second round, his first match of the week. And I was watching that thinking, "Oh my goodness, this would just be, I mean, I think the tournament would have just packed up the court and gone home and called it all off if he'd lost in his first match. I mean, that would have been so devastating. So I was pleased to see him turn that around. It was on the same day Dominic Thiem lost, incidentally, to Basilashvili. Just quickly before I give my pat Dominic Thiem speech, the court announcers and everything, the prize givers were gathering at the side of the court. That always strikes me as how off-putting could that be to catch that at the corner of your eye? I mean, sometimes they're really, really visible, the way they gather there when you're within a game or two of the end of the match. And I understand why they have to do it, but how off-putting could that be? You're in a position, you're about to serve for it, and you look over and you go, everybody's there, they think I'm going to win this, I can only blow it. Now, you know, when Dan Evans played Marin Cilic and won, of course, in Australia, I was doing the flash interview on the court, which I think we actually ran on the podcast. And the position to wait to do the flash interview is in sort of the tunnel, the walk-on tunnel. It was court two, I think, court two there. And he was a game or two away from the end, he must have been, because that's why we were there. I think perhaps only a game away. And he jogged off court to go to the loo. And the loo was in that tunnel. So he had to run past us. And we all made eye contact with him. And it was just this very, very odd thing. He knew that we were there. We'd all made eye contact. And I thought, oh my goodness, I really, really hope this doesn't throw him. Because it could easily just take you out of the moment, couldn't it? I mean, I can imagine it very easily taking you out of the moment. I guess that these guys are such machines, you know, so focused, so good at staying in the moment that they are impervious to it. But, you know, Dan Evans is less of a machine, isn't he? So I did worry that I had altered, or we had altered, the course of tennis history by being there.
Obviously, you and I know more than many what it is like on the organizational side of a tournament from our experiences at Queen's. And I know what it's, I've often been waiting in either behind doors or in corners of court trying to keep out of view, but knowing that we've got to get out there ASAP to organize the presentation, for instance, at the end of the final, if somebody wins the tournament. So I know why they're there. Admittedly, I think there are inevitably a number of sort of rubberneckers as well who just have to be able to watch what's going on as well. And frankly, that's something I think you have to get over and not do. But I do remember there was an occasion in 1998 when Tim Henman was playing at Queen's, and he talked afterwards, and I'll never forget this because he was probably talking about me and two or three other people I was with, and he was certainly talking about members of the BBC presenting team, where we all were in the corner of the court waiting for his match to finish. And he said, I became aware of them. I maybe heard a beep of a camera or something or other. I became aware of them and it put me off. And I've never forgotten that. And I've always kept that of you ever since, I'll tell you.
Well, that's very, very interesting. Another cracking David Law anecdote.
Well, you know, when you've been around for the last 50 years or whatever it is, these things do tend to happen. So anyway, Dimitrov managed to win. Also would like to say congratulations to Paul McNamee, the tournament director there. Obviously, long-time Australian Open tournament director who obviously just has so much experience of putting on an event. And you could see, I know it was Dimitrov in the final, so you're going to get a good crowd. But the second year they've held that tournament, it looked like a big deal. They looked like they'd staged an event that was above its grade as a 250.
Yeah, and I believe the finals weekend, the Saturday and Sunday, had already sold out before the week started, I think. Certainly before Dimitrov was anywhere close to reaching the finals. So that's a real testament to the strength of that event. That's great.
Yeah. Now, in the other two finals we were mentioning, very different types of winner, because in Montpellier, Alexander Zverev won, beating Joe Wilfried Tsonga and Richard Gasquet back-to-back, which I think takes some doing on any court, but let alone in France. I mean, the French players do tend to mop up those tournaments, and I think it's particularly impressive from Zverev after a really disappointing Davis Cup weekend last week, don't you?
Oh, yeah. And the fact that he also won the doubles title with Misha, I mean, that does not look great that they weren't able to do that in Davis Cup, replicate any kind of success. But yeah, what a subsequent week they've had. Just amazing. I mean, Zverev, I thought he's a future number one for a year or so now. I think ever since that match that he didn't actually win against Nadal in Miami last year. Was it Miami or Indian Wells? Indian Wells, perhaps. Ever since that match where he had the match point, and he will, I'm sure the nightmares about what happened on that match point have now been put to bed. But yeah, I've thought that for a while. But he is making faster progress than I thought. I have to say, he's really well. He's number one in the Emirates Race to Milan, which is a new thing. It's the hashtag next gen tour finals.
It's the under 21s.
For the under 21s, yes, or 21 and unders, I believe. So he's number one in the race to Milan. Where does he go up to in the rankings? 17, I think, in the overall rankings, which is, I mean, yeah. Going into matches now, it's only really top 10 players that I don't think of him as favourite or equal to beat, and that says everything you need to know really about how good he is already. And I'm constantly blown away by how good he is physically, because he's a big guy. He doesn't look like he's filled out yet, but Jez Green is doing such an awesome job with him, because for his physique he moves and uses his body so fantastically well on a tennis court. So yeah, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind, unless he gets some awful, terrible injury, he is destined for greatness in tennis.
Well said. Now, the other winner was in Quito? Is that how we're saying it?
How else would you be saying it,
David? Well, that's how I'm saying it, anyway. And it was Victor Estrella Burgos. Is that right?
Estrella Burgos, I think.
All right, fine. Anyway, what is he, about 48? And he won against Pablo Lorenzi, and it's the third title in succession in Quito for Estrella Burgos. And, I mean, you know, you could line up Nadal, Djokovic, Murray and Federer, and they wouldn't be able to beat him in Quito.
He is probably the best altitude player in the world, isn't he? That's his speciality, which is clay clay court matches played at altitude. He would have loved a Champions Tour event that I did in Bogota a few years ago, that I covered for the ATP Champions Tour in Bogota a few years ago, where nobody, I mean, I've never seen so many air shots in my life. You know, we had John McEnroe and Goran Ivanišević, and it was, I mean, the level of tennis was horrendous because the conditions were just so difficult, and they all hadn't arrived early enough to have any time to adjust to it. They just said, this is unbelievably difficult, essentially a sort of slow clay court, but where the ball is flying through the air incredibly quickly. So yeah, that's his speciality. I remember talking to, is it Kyle Edmund that played him in Melbourne? Yes, it was Kyle Edmund. And yeah, he talked a lot about how much of an altitude specialist he is. So, you know, you can't knock it. He's carved out a niche, hasn't he, at the age of 48?
A slight exaggeration, but he certainly is old enough now to play on the Champions Tour if he so wished, I think. But anyway, do you know what? I think I'd be quite an altitude player. Can we have our rematch on altitude?
I mean, no.
Why not? Are you scared?
No.
Okay, so that's that then. Well, we can do it then. Is that right? Or
you can do whatever you want, David. You won't have anyone at the other end of the court.
Fine. I'll play Rosie. I don't care. Maria Sharapova, Catherine, has been given a wild card for Madrid. It is not surprising in the slightest. I think it's something that I think we will see happen at, frankly, any tournament she wants to get a wild card at on the tour, on the WTA circuit. I think she will get one. I don't think there will be any hesitation from anybody. However, I don't know about the French Open. I personally don't know why. I don't have any evidence for this, but I have a feeling that if she wants a wild card from the French Open, she will get one. I don't know whether you would agree with that. On the question of Wimbledon, however, which she may not end up needing a wild card for, she may be able to come back in Stuttgart and play Madrid and get enough points and be able to get directly into the draw at Wimbledon without needing a wild card.
A semi and a quarter, I believe, would be enough.
Right. However, there is the question mark over whether that will happen. If it doesn't happen and she would need a wild card in order to get in, I don't think it is a guarantee that she will get one necessarily from Wimbledon. I mean, we don't know. We haven't spoken to anybody who has said that she will or that she won't. It's my suspicion that is not guaranteed for the simple reason that I think Wimbledon do operate under different rules. In their view to everybody else, they don't just need to do things commercially and for the sake of crowds and revenue that other tournaments would have to consider. And I wonder whether they will actually feel that they want to be giving a wild card to somebody who has failed a doping test. So I put that out on social media as to what people thought should or should not happen, a pole vault, and asked the question, if she doesn't get in on her ranking, do you think Wimbledon should give Maria Sharapova a wild card? We had 1,184 votes. 40% said yes, she should get a wild card. 60% said no. I have to say I'm in the no camp, personally. I feel that I completely understand why the tournaments are giving her wildcards from a commercial standpoint. From a Wimbledon standpoint, I just personally believe that they don't need to do that and that it would be quite important, quite something for them if they decided not to and said, actually, you know, we feel that it's not appropriate for us to give a wildcard in this particular instance. That's my view.
Yeah, I feel quite strongly about it as well, that I, not that they should or shouldn't, but I would prefer to see them not give her a wild card.
Yeah, that's how
I would feel the same about the French Open. I mean, I feel the same way about every tournament. I would prefer to see her not get wild cards, really. I think it lessens the severity of the punishment if she's able to have a cushy re-entry into the tour. That's how I feel. I completely understand why, tennis events, sports events are commercial ventures. I completely understand why events will give her wild cards. And some of them might give them, you know, with a bit of a sour taste in their mouth, might wish they didn't feel the need to. But I understand that there are commercial concerns at play, and I get that. I want to see WTA Tour events do well. So, me standing there on my high horse going, you shouldn't give wild cards to Maria Sharapova when it will guarantee them, you know, TV coverage and press coverage and sell out stadiums, I don't think that's fair, really. You're right that the situation is a bit different for the Grand Slams because, yes, they're commercial entities as well, but they don't have the same commercial pressures, let's be honest, as other events. There's also the ITF factor. I mean, this is a woman who, her last statement regarding the ITF was that she planned to sue them. Now, I don't know what the status of that is. I've not heard her say she now doesn't plan to sue them. I don't know, but obviously the Grand Slams are ITF events, so that surely has to be a factor. I agree with you that I feel there's more chance that the French will give her a wild card than Wimbledon. I can't quite put my finger on why, other than to sort of use sort of slightly French stereotypes, like them being just a little bit more laissez-faire about things. And on one hand, I was thinking that I was thinking it through and thinking, well, I think the French probably will give her a wild card and that will make it more difficult for Wimbledon not to. But actually, I've revised that opinion. I now think that, I mean, Wimbledon quite likes to set itself apart from the other Grand Slams, doesn't it? Quite likes to make statements, whether it be via, you know, architectural or construction-based developments or rule developments or prize money or whatever it is. They like to just make a little statement about being a cut above the others, and in many people's eyes they are a cut above all other tennis tournaments. So actually I think the French Open giving her a wild card, which I think they will, doesn't have that big a bearing on whether Wimbledon win will. I mean you saying it's not a guarantee, that's without question, it is not guaranteed. I think it's far from guaranteed. They might. I suspect that there is division in the committee about how they feel about it. I suspect there's a lot of strong feeling either way, and it's sort of ultimately, and a lot of pressures either way. I mean, can you imagine the number of phone calls they're getting from agents and sponsors? And, you know, there are so many stakeholders in, not just in tennis, but in an individual player. I mean, just look at how strongly some of her sponsors came out, you know, Head, for one example. There are so many people with huge vested interests in a decision like this. There'll be, you know, tons of lobbying going on behind the scenes. And I don't mean that will necessarily be the swaying or decisive factor, but it's in there. It's something to take into consideration. I think another thing to take into consideration is that, rightly or wrongly, I think I said this before, you have to consider the scenario where a British youngster, now, actually, there aren't that many promising sort of young Brits at the moment that are in wildcard territory. You've got a good crop of players who are all basically good enough to get in on their own ranking, and then the next lot are actually quite far off the pace, and there aren't any brilliantly good juniors at the moment, so perhaps it's less of a likely scenario. But you have to consider the scenario where a young British player misses out on a wild card because Maria Sharapova gets one, and she speaks out and says, I lost out to drugs cheat Maria Sharapova. That could be a headline in a tabloid. We all know that, rightly or wrongly. Let's not get into a discussion of tabloid headlines and their ethical standards, but that is a scenario, I think, which could happen, and Wimbledon really need to think that through and think whether they're prepared to let themselves in for all of that, or whether they'd rather really keep their powder dry. And Wimbledon generally over the years has erred on the side of keeping their powder dry, haven't they? But I certainly think there's a good chance they'll give her one, but it's a long way from guaranteed.
I asked the opinion of Simon Briggs, the Telegraph's tennis correspondent. Obviously, we are brought to you in association with the Telegraph, so we wanted to get Simon's view. He said he sees it as a grey area and may reveal whether the All England clubs see themselves as a commercial entity first or as moral arbiters. Theoretically, they can do what they want. It would be more admirable, in his view, if they held out against Sharapova and the IMG machine, especially after the way Sharapova reacted after her CAS sentence reduction, but that there are lots of politics in the sport. He reckons that Phil Brook was erring on the side of giving a wild card to Sharapova in their spring briefing last year, in as much as he said that Phil Brook said that it would be a great shame for fans if they weren't able to see her. Simon's view is that they should probably say no, although he doesn't think it's a case of if they do let her have a wild card, or if they do award her a wild card, he doesn't think it's a total disgrace. He can see both sides of it. So
yeah, I think that's well argued, and I agree with him. Really, the point to make, sort of in mitigation of everything I've just said, is that I was thinking it through. You know, the point I made about it seeming unfair that she, the wild cards are essentially watering down the severity of her punishment, because they're making it a lot easier for a return than it otherwise would be for somebody else. But then the whole system of wildcards, you know, the principle, by definition, a wild card kind of is unfair, doesn't it? And sometimes they're awarded, sometimes it's more of a meritocracy than others, but, you know, only four countries in the world have a Grand Slam, and, you know, they, apart from, you know, reciprocal arrangements and the odd sort of sentimental wild card here and there, they go to their own players. It's not an equitable meritocratic system, by definition, a wild card. So there is that.
There is that. Let's hear what you lot think about it. The yes camp, that Maria Sharapova should get a wild card at Wimbledon if she needs one, come from Anna from Sash, who says she served a sentence, so she should start with a clean slate. Vesterland said CAS ruled that this was not a case of intentional doping. She served the ban for 15 months. She should be free to compete by Wimbledon. Richard Woodward said, as a former champion and finalist, she deserves a wild card. It's as plain as that for me. Alex says she's a former champion, served a ban accordingly and conducted her press conference accepting responsibility correctly. And Kelvin said she served a ban. I guess everyone deserves a second chance. However, I'd give her a wild card for qualifiers if I was Wimbledon, which is an interesting angle to go with. The no camps, Anderson says her conduct is not good for the sport. She shouldn't be given any help. She needs to earn respect through hard work. Stuart Hill, well, I certainly think hard work isn't an issue for her. I mean, given the amount of training she's clearly doing from the pictures she's been posting. Stuart Hill says, a wild card is a privilege. Just returning from a drugs ban doesn't qualify her for such a privilege. Rupert Basham says, it would send completely the wrong message and diminish the severity of her actions. It would tell people that it's okay to fail a test because Wimbledon says so. Mr. P says, with all the players out there who haven't carelessly thrown their careers into a tailspin, it's not fair. George AD finally says, I think if this wasn't Sharapova, the idea of a wild card wouldn't even be entertained. Well, that's probably true, but she is Maria Sharapova.
That's a preposterous point. I mean,
the fact is, she is who she is. She's a former champion. She's a big name. You can understand the appeal of giving a wild card to her.
That's a ridiculous point. Of course, it is what it is. The qualies a wild card point is an interesting one. I was thinking about that as well. It's sort of, I mean, in one way, it doesn't really deal with the issue. That's sort of a cop out. But on the other hand, you could see it as a happy compromise. But I think unlikely she might. It's a good chance she won't need a qualies wildcard. There's a good chance she'll be in the qualies zone, but not in the main draw zone by then. She would only have to have a reasonably decent Stuttgart, Madrid. I assume she'll go to Rome. We obviously don't know what's going to happen there with the wildcard, but I suspect she'd get one there. and French, you'd only have to do reasonably well at a few of those to be in the qualies qualification zone. So, yeah, I'd thought about that as well, and it's an interesting point, but it probably won't end up solving the problem for various reasons.
Pole vault, Catherine. Excellent.
Wasn't that pole vault?
We got two more. I mean, one of them's yours, so, you know, you can't complain when
you set one. That was just a
You set one last
point.
Week.
I didn't.
No, you deliberately set one last week about...
You're making me grumpy now. Get on with it.
If Wimbledon took place this week, who's the favourite on the men's side? That's what you said, Catherine. You wanted a pole vault.
I wanted to debate it. I didn't want a... Anyway, get on with it.
Well, there's 1,066 people who do want to get involved, Catherine, with this conversation.
I bet 1,065 of them are porn bots, David.
No, they're not. They're genuine people. Admittedly, some of them might be me. One of them is me. I voted. And anyway, if Wimbledon took place this week, who's the favourite? 46% said Andy Murray. 39% said Roger Federer. 8% said Novak Djokovic. 7% said someone else.
Fine. Yeah, I respect the results of the pole vault.
Okay. And the other pole vault that we had was Grigor Dimitrov will win the following before he retires. 0 slams, 1 slam, more than 1 slam. What do you think?
I think he might win 1 slam.
We haven't got a might win 1 slam answer.
Well,
you've
if
got
I was pressed into
answers.
Giving an answer, I would say 1 slam.
Well, 35% of the 1,066 people who voted agree with you, Catherine.
What are the other numbers?
42% say more than one.
Oh, crikey.
Optimists. And only 23%.
Well, they are tennis podcast listeners.
Only 23% think he won't win anything at all.
Interesting. How different would the results of that poll have been 6 months ago?
Yeah, even three months ago. I mean, yeah. Crikey. I think at the start of this year, I think less than half of the answers thought he would win anything at all of significance. So,
which shows just how silly predictions are, doesn't it? Well, it's only long-term predictions. That really,
the whole podcast's a bit silly,
that really,
isn't it?
Shows it all in the ridiculous light it deserves to be shown.
However, Catherine, the biggest revelation of the whole podcast is that you said after I gave those results, interesting. You're being won over. I can sense it. Right. Okay. That's maybe not going to be the case. Catherine, we're going to be back together next week in person, aren't we? Because at the moment we're not. And we might even Periscope the podcast. So, you know, I better actually wear some decent clothes.
We might. Just because you've bought yourself a selfie stick, David, doesn't mean we have to make use of it. But yes, we might.
Well, all right, fine. Look, I'm trying, folks. You know, I can lead the horse to water. But anyway,
I feel awful now. You are trying.
I just
don't want to, you know, what if I wake up with a massive spot on the end of my nose? I'm just reserving the right to duck out.
Catherine, you're on the telly every other 5 minutes. I mean, goodness sake, is this what you like? I'm not going on today. I've got a spot.
I'm a nightmare diva.
it's only because of the company she has to keep on the podcast as opposed to Eurosport, where there are perfectly decent people who don't subject her to pole vaults. That's what it's about, isn't it?
True story, David.
True story. There we are. Catherine, I think that's about all we have for this week's edition of the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Well, we didn't even mention the Tony Nadal news, did we? I mean, I think it's a bit of a non-story myself, but he has said that this will be his last year travelling on tour with Rafa. He's going to work Nadal's academy instead.
Yeah. Although I'm trying to get the official word on that, folks, from Rafa's PR manager. So stay tuned for an update on that. If I manage to get the version of that, I'll either put it out on a separate podcast or I'll put it in next week's show, and we'll see if we can get the official word. But I tend to agree with you. I suspect it's just it's more of a headline than a story, if you know what I mean. I don't really think there's an awful lot changed. I mean, Carlos Moura has come on board, we know that. And inevitably, Tony Nadal's role is probably going to get reduced as a result, as he shares it out. But anyway, Catherine, I think that is about it for the Tennis Podcast. I'm going to go and have a cup of tea.
Let's cut our losses before risk of pole vault rearing its head again.
What pole vault can I think of? All right, fine. Well, it's been lovely to speak to you all. Catherine, have a good day, and we'll speak to you soon.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.